episode number 198 with Steve and Mike. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton.
And this is Mike Snyderman.
How the hell are you, Michael? I'm excited to hear about... I kind of want to go over our... I got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Well, I don't, Steve.
I'm going to have to carry this one up. I don't
know what it is, but I'm saying no just to be, you know, argumentative. No, sorry.
198 episodes, man. That is...
pretty badass, Stevie.
Isn't it? Two away from... I'm excited. Very cool. Got some interesting guests coming up. You and I talked a little bit about it. Alex Fitzgerald. We got Andrew Brokus and Phil Hellmuth. So
okay,
got a strong lineup.
Your buddy Phil Hellmuth.
Yes, my BFF. Yes, yeah. He just doesn't know it
when
yet.
When are we gonna see you like front seat at a Golden State Warrior game with some Hellmuth tickets? Isn't he like? Friends with the owner, he's always like dropping. Let's like people to know which rich and influential people he is friends with outside the world of poker.
Yes, yeah. When I talked to him on the phone the last time we, just before we recorded, it was episode 147. He was telling me that, hang on, I'm going to be a couple minutes. I was on the phone with my billionaire friends. I'm like, okay,
right.
right. Yes, I think he knows. Rubs elbows with those folks.
Yes, Steve. Like I've always said, man, you just get stuff done. You don't fail here. You want to start a successful, you know, you want to do Amazon. You immediately you're doing it well and making money.
Thank you.
Want to picking up chicks, even though you're a loser? Well, look at 9 minutes later. He's in a threesome with a couple of the Brazilian twins. How did that happen?
And they even have all their teeth.
And even the podcast, man. Very nice work.
Yeah, this has been a fun run, man. It's been a lot of fun. I was telling somebody about you the other day. I think it was one of the guys at work. And I was like, I knew that this guy and I were going to become long-term friends when we're doing the bowling thing with the TPE meetup, and it just looked like I had incredible form with bowling, but yet my score reflected after 8 frames a score of like 56, you know, and I remember you said something to the effect of like, I bet if we get Steve 1 hour of bowling lessons, we could turn him into a 160 bowler. And then someone wanted to take action on it, and I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty funny.
I can be, Steve.
Do you even remember that or no?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Do you even remember that?
I don't remember the bowling. No, I don't remember making that joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it landed perfectly on me. It was a good one.
I remember grabbing your wallet, which you left on the bar briefly, and there was only $3 in it, and I just put it back in disgust. I said, I'm going to have to work this guy for the long con. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's great. Well, we're into 2019 now. How was your 2018? What, just a review. How do you feel it went?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot less money right now than I did 12 months ago, of course, because of the crypto.
Yeah.
It actually wasn't a terrible money, year for, well, like I said, the tournaments are just a disaster. Live tournaments down like 24K this past year.
Okay.
And, December, by the way, quickly was my worst month ever in cash, right after my best month. It's so, I mean, like really bad. Like it, I mean, I ran bad, very bad, but, kind of knew. No, I just said after last month, I said, let's just play good poker, play a lot of hours. I don't care if I lose a couple thousand or win a couple thousand. And, yeah, I can't even assess it. I know there was like 3 times like the first couple days where I played like a $4,000 pot with, you know, knowing exactly what the guy had, but just willing to gamble. Like I've got the nut flush draw with a gutter and the guy probably has 2 pair and, I lose. And I have bottom set against what the guy probably has a straight and a flush draw and he gets there. Yeah. Where, you know what I mean? I could kind of reduce variance there. So I was playing, you know, there's always a couple really bad calls that I make. I don't think I played, but you know, the run bad was real.
Yeah.
My last day of the month where I was, my mother was here for a week around Christmas, which was nice. But I told her, you know, I was having a bad month. I'm like, I want to work a couple days. And so I went there two straight nights and both of them were like epically bad, like $3,500 losses.
Ooh.
And one of them, I flopped four sets and lost all of them.
Wow. That is some run bad.
But, well, twice I called when it was four line to a straight on the river. So I don't know how much it's run bad, really. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe you could have saved the 1,500. And
I could have lost. Probably if I play well, I still lose five or six K this month. But okay. it was worse. All so, right. But, you know, positive for 2019, I guess. Oh, I have, this is kind of funny, Steve. I'm one of my New Year's resolutions was just like go in there just to like kick ass. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I almost got in two fist fights my first two trips to the casino.
You're ready to kick ass, huh?
I don't think it's related. I honestly, like twice, both times I was threatened, but I guess I was willing to escalate. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
This one time, we got this one guy who's famous. He's made a lot of money in poker. He's kind of, you know, tournaments. You could probably see him. I think he made a couple WPT final tables. And he's great at cap, but he's also just a degenerate gambler. And so he's playing 2-5. And he's just pissed off because he wanted a bigger game. He'd go back and play Pai Gow for 20 minutes. They'd have to call him back. He's playing like three hands an hour, but every time he'd come back, he would berate us for playing a small game. It's like, okay. Want to straddle, do this and that. We're saying no. So then a little later, they start a 5-5. This guy goes, I stay at 2-5. But the 5-5 breaks because they can't get anyone to play it. So we combine again, and they bring all their chips over. And I say, well, this is a 2-5. You got to take your chips off.
Yeah.
And this guy says, what, are you scared? And I just fucking lost it. I said, listen, you fucking degenerate gambler, fuck, you're a loser. First of all, this guy's like a 60-year-old Asian guy who's probably weighs like 110 pounds, something like that. I don't know.
And probably very good for the game, right?
He's like jumps out of the chair. Let's go outside right now. So I like kind of point. I'm like, you joking? He's like, no, he took a step. So I immediately jumped out of my chair.
Yeah.
And I've seen him do this before. Let's go outside. And, it, you know, nothing is really going to come of it. Because he's going to have his, although because the floor was immediately there and he kind of moved past the floor and bumped his chest into mine. So he actually fucking, that is assault technically, but that was it. So the floor is saying, calm down. And I'm listening, but then I'm just tilting my head to the left, constantly letting the guy know where the door is. Mm-hmm. And there was 0% chance that he was coming outside. But after we were told to calm down, I locked eyes with him and I went outside for 10 minutes and he didn't come outside, of course. But so everybody's talking about that. And two nights later, what happened? This was not last night, the night before. This was pretty funny. There's this one guy, he's kind of, he's really bad at poker and making bad decisions, but he all of a sudden he starts running it up and he's, he's an egomaniac. Just those certain people who drag in their chips like they're, when they win a pot, they kicked you in the ass, kind of, you know, very.
Yeah.
It's not symbolizing it, but physically you can tell. So, and his chips were, his white chips and his green chips were, you're supposed to be in front. They weren't there on the side.
Now at your casino, the white chips are hundreds and the greens are 25s, right?
Yeah, they have to be in front.
Yeah.
I think that's the same way at every casino.
Yeah, that's just standard.
And his were on the side and I knew they were there, but I had two guys who just sat down, including a one who was a prop. I just knew he wouldn't be able to see those chips.
Yeah.
So I'm like, dude, but he just was dragging a pot and stacking chips. I'm like, dude, can you put those chips in front? He's like, what the hell do you care? And I like turned to the dealer was really the cause of the problem. This dealer's kind of the worst dealer. I was talking about it. Someone else, I'm like, this is the dealer's fault. He said, yeah. The dealer just said, well, I can see him. Because I just asked the dealer to explain the rule.
Yeah.
You guys see, and this guy went to just, he's like, if you want to get my chips and move my chips, why don't you fucking come after me? Da-da, going on and on. And he like just all red face and out. It's like, dude, relax. It's not like I called you a fat ass or anything. And he jumped out of his chair. This guy was ready to go, too. And I mean, I was like, my buddy, the adrenaline was coursing through me. Like, my body was shaking. I'll fucking kick your ass. And the floor was there pretty soon. He's like, and again, this guy kind of lunged at me, too.
Wow.
And the floor was there, you know, but he was very close to crossing the line of death. He was kind of reaching over, and his finger was in my face, and it was about, like, 30 inches away, like 29 inches is the point where...
It enters the personal bubble. I wonder if, though, when the floor asked you, like, what were you doing, and did you pull out your goals and show them that, you know, I'm accomplishing my 2019 goals right here?
Yes.
Kicking ass.
They nodded. Oh, we understand. Yes.
Okay. We'll get you another one, Mike.
I mean, here, the funny thing after one at the table was, like, first of all, he left, and he got thrown out, because, like, I dialed down, and he wasn't.
Yeah, he couldn't.
He was still yelling, I'll kick your fucking ass, buddy. I'll kill you, you know. But there's a couple of people that were, of course, upset at the table. They're like, dude, you're the one who escalated it. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, look, you could have ignored him. I'm like, yeah, the point is, you know, so I guess I did have that option. So the guy's getting thrown out, and he's still over there huffing and puffing and whatever, and he's walking over. I said, dude, I'm sorry. He's like, immediately his face softens. It's kind of funny. My one buddy's like... It's like, dude, you see how easy that was? You totally control the situation. Yeah. Like, you know, you're in charge now. At the point you say sorry, like, he's a dick if he keeps coming at you.
Yeah, yeah.
He was still thrown out. He was still off the door. But so I'll need to check.
Right on. Well, it sounds like you're knocking that one out.
I've already achieved that. No, I mean, this wasn't really. I didn't really sort of have the New Year. I had a New Year's goal to go in there and just making money is like my only purpose and just, you know what I mean? It's just kind of funny that happened that way. But my other New Year's resolution was to, try to lose weight, Steve. I'm 207 pounds this morning.
Nice.
Well, if you know, I was 245 pounds, probably in July.
245 and you're 207. Wow. Okay. I haven't seen you in a while. I got to make a trip down there.
Yeah, definitely. I made wagers on this. Maybe I already discussed this. So I still have 3 weeks to lose 7 pounds. And the weight is pretty much flying off me when I want to, when I'm motivated.
Good, 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 good. Yeah. I did this year for 2018. I changed my workout a lot, which, and then my diet a bit. That was from my injury. And I feel, as far as weight, I think I've lost a couple of pounds, but I just feel strong and lean, you know,
right.
I like it. I set a goal last year to get a new plane, but the goal to make it realistic, I put it for 2020. So I guess that one's kind of carrying over, through this year. This year I set kind of a lofty one. I set a goal last year of becoming an IFR pilot. And I never even took one lesson. So I'm like, okay, I got to do that this year. It's just going to be hundreds of hours of studying and probably well over 10 grand. And, but I just got to do it. It would allow me to fly in an almost any kind of weather scenario, unless it's like, you know, thunderstorms or something.
What's IFR?
It's instrument flight rules. So you fly by instruments. You can basically, if it's overcast and cloudy outside, you can still take off in your plane and go to Vegas. That wouldn't be a... Now, when I go out, like the last time I went out a couple of weeks ago, I was looking at the weather, looking at the 7-day forecast, because I was going to be out there for, you know, week or week and a half. And, you know, the weather may look good, a week and a half out, but then a few days before you leave, you realize, oh shit, there's a storm system coming in 2 days. I need to leave tonight or tomorrow, or I'm going to be stuck here for a week. You know, if I had this IFR cert, that really wouldn't matter.
Okay.
You know, it'd just be, so I don't want to get that.
Do you like your place you live in now, or is like buying a home again since,
that's my other one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I want to, I think the market it's already kind of crested out. I've been watching the market values in this area, and, you know, there's a lot of like, a home that's 400,000 right now, the price is reduced by 15,000. The ones that are half a mil, they've been reduced 25,000, like that, you know? And, So it's already made that crest, and I believe it's coming down. I don't know. This one's going to depend on when I interpret the bottom to be. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna get one when I think we've hit the bottom, and that could be this year. I think it will most likely be this year, but it could roll into next year too. But I thought it should have happened 6 months ago, but I was wrong there. But it just took a little bit longer to dip than I thought it would.
I don't know if we went into your divorce settlement. We mentioned that not only did she rob a checking account and empty it of like $23,000, you also ended up having to give her half your house.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
It came out to 75K.
It was that includes the money she stole?
That includes... No, that's not including the money she stole.
So basically $100,000.
Basically 100K, yeah. Yeah. That was a stinger. That was a tough check to write.
Right.
That was the cost of getting her out of the house and out of my life.
Seeming how your career poker winnings are like $340.
Yes.
I don't know if grinding longer hours is the answer online.
That was a stinger. But
well, you took it well.
Yeah, yeah. I came out better on the other side, I think.
I think the part of her trying to poison you to death is the part that would stick with me more than the money. But Steve, you're a very forgiving sort.
I don't know what else it could have been.
Can we tell this story from the beginning?
Okay. I think we danced around it for about a year.
Well, I can't remember how much we've said about it. I don't know if we did. Yeah, you've wanted to hold off till the divorce was final, which was like a month ago, right?
Exactly, yeah. I finally got her name off the properties.
Start off, you were visiting for Vegas. You were coming for like 4 days.
I was visiting for Vegas. Yes.
And you were staying in the house, obviously, with me and Alex.
Yeah.
And I don't – did you just get on and just arbitrarily, like, did you get a notice from your bank, or did you check your bank – you just happened to be checking your bank one day to pay a bill? How'd you know at that point that your joint checking account had been emptied and she had transferred all the money to some account in Colombia?
I was actually on vacation. This happened just before I met with you guys in Vegas.
You showed up already.
Yeah, so I was down in El Salvador or somewhere. I can't remember. And I was in Honduras. And I had just gone to the ATM that day. And I had pulled out, 4,000 lempiras, which is their version of, that's what they call their currency. And I didn't know how much it was. So I have a habit of going on and checking the bank account when I make a withdrawal in a new country just to make sure shit went good. And you,
of course,
you know, you never know in these countries, you know, because it's third world. So I think it's more likely that the ATMs can have those little card readers and stuff on there than at home. And I wanted to see what the exchange rate was, what 4,000 actually was, if it was $250 or if it was like 400 or what, you know. So
right.
I look it up. And then I noticed the account says zero. And I'm like, that can't be right. You know, the main checking account that we used to pay bills and everything. And then there was another account, savings. And there was another one, poker. Another one, travel. And then the account that we had, you know, jointly had like 23K in it, which we were going to use for her flight school. And that was zero. And I thought, oh shit, damn it, I shouldn't have gone to that ATM. And so I looked through the you know, where the hell did this extra over 20 grand go? And then I see my ex-wife's name, and I'm like, oh god, what happened? And then I look at the transfer where it went, and it went somewhere down to Colombia. And right about the time that I saw that, I got a text on my phone from my ex saying, I've had it, I'm done, filing for divorce. And I'm like, oh shit, this was intentional. It's not like there was some family emergency or something that was going on. I was like, oh god, she did this on purpose. I'm out of the freaking country right now. I have another few grand between the other accounts. I think I had another, 8 to 12 grand, something like that. First world problems. So I was like, okay. And I was talking to my buddy, and I'm like, what the hell do I do? And he's like, well, you better secure the rest of your money there before she does the same thing to the other accounts. And I'm like, fuck, I guess you're right. And I was, you know, it took me several days to like come to grips with what the fuck had just happened before I move that money into another. I had to open up another account with the bank, move all that in there, because I had an account there for my godson for his college, like just all this shit, you know.
Cancel your credit cards.
Oh God, yeah, canceled all the credit cards, canceled the debit cards and her debit card, and then got a new one. Meanwhile, I'm in another country, and so I did that. I squirreled the money away, and I thought, okay, well, we're minimizing the damage here, you know. I still have like another week on vacation, and I almost debated going home, but luckily my buddies talked me out of it, and they said, no, you'll physically kill her if you go home now. You're probably right. So I had to go home for like one day, and then I was going to go straight to Vegas just to
get... I'm sorry, one second. When she said she's getting divorced, was this a phone call you had or via email? Was this a conversation?
This was a text message.
And that's all she said. Did you respond, like, is this serious? And just, were you getting nothing back? I'm curious. Was there an explanation or something or anything?
I think I called her, and I remember her saying that she was angry, and she was she eventually said that her mom needed an emergency surgery, which I later found out I think was, like, carpal tunnel. And I'm like... I don't even know what's true with this girl or not anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if...
I don't know if it's ever an emergency surgery. Emergency means, like...
Yeah, like you got a freaking brain tumor or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know if she really did have carpal tunnel surgery, or if this was just some story she came up with, or, like, I just don't know.
Either way, it doesn't matter.
It really doesn't matter. Yeah. I remember calling her and telling her, no, it's over, and because she was apologetic, and I think she realized she fucked up, because... If she would have waited like another like 2 months, she would have got her residency extension, and then she could have been here for like 10 years. Yeah, she pulled the plug in November, and she should have waited until January.
Right.
But anyhow, I got...
So back in the States. Sorry.
I come back for one night, and then I was going to head straight out to Vegas, and she was in town for like... 2 hours when I got home, and then she left on like a 4-day trip or something, and I went home, and she was trying to talk me out of the divorce, and I'm like, no, it's final, I'm gonna go file, and then, you know, that'll be it. And
that was kind of a chilling moment, as you described, if you want to go into that a little bit, because I remember how you described her there. Didn't she's like, come on, I miss you, let's do it, and you're like, I'm sorry, I can never trust you again, and then she just became like absolutely icy cold and just like, yes, stared you down. Well, I'm gonna do what I have to do, like,
yes, right?
Is that correct?
Or? Yes. I remember before we got married, she's like, you know, you have all these, you had these properties and stuff, you know, before we got married, and I don't care about that, I just want to be with you, even if we get you know, if it doesn't work out between us, you know, that's yours. I have no interest in it. I don't care. And then as soon as I told her, once she realized it was final and that, you know, she wasn't going to talk me out of it, and she realized that, okay, we are getting divorced. You're right. It was like the mask came off, and the sweet gal that I had married no longer existed. And she became this ice queen. And she's like, well, then, I'm going to go after whatever I have to, and I'm going to take as much as I can before I leave. And I'm like, holy shit. Oh God. Like, is this girl going to get a lawyer? Has she been talking to somebody? Like, has she been planning this? And so she left for work, and we're married for almost 3 years. So she knew my routine like clockwork. And about 8 o'clock every night, I get the scotch glass. I put some ice cubes in it, and I pour my glass of scotch.
Can we talk about those? This is an interesting... I want to go make this a longer story, if that's okay, if you don't mind.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to talk about you in Vegas showing up, because that was kind of... I've never seen you like that, or even couldn't even imagine it, how traumatized you were, if I can just talk about that.
Yeah, what was it like from your perspective?
Well, if you remember, you were just numb, because like we were discussing the whole, like, was she setting up from the beginning? Is this just an immigrant trying to steal your money? And you just didn't know. Me and Carlos, if you remember, we were just out. You tell Carlos that like $23,000. That's you know how many cans of black beans that is.
About 23,000.
The two of us were just fucking outraged over this. We're ready to like you know because if it happened to me, I would obviously would have been racing home to toss her out of a second floor window. But yeah. You were pretty cool. I mean, I was trying to be. This was just talking it through, though, to bring it up. I mean, I don't know if I mentioned this before. I think I did. I was like, okay, just for debate's sake, let's look at it from her perspective and pretend that this isn't just a con, that she's unhappy. And I, like, just brought up the fact that you would have been on a long vacation with your friend, right?
Yeah.
I still find that a little unusual.
You're not the first one to say that.
Like, that you and your wife were never... Yeah, I can see like going for like a weekend with the buddies and stuff, but for like a long vacation, I don't know. Maybe you invited her or not. And the fact that when she went to school, like it was in San Antonio or something.
In Texas, yeah. In
you guys Houston. Switched your schedule, or you're only seeing each other 4 or 5 times a month.
True.
So I in my mind, I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's a little strange to me. I mean, maybe from both ends, but you obviously loved her. It's just you don't need that constant attention. You know what I mean? You can. So, yeah. Anyways, just to throw that out. But yeah, I don't know. It was just a crazy time because we were discussing. All of a sudden, you're discussing these old moments with her, and I'm like, oh my god, we got to kill her. I'm like, wait, hold on a second, Steve, did you beat this woman? You know, like,
is she sitting in a trunk right now?
I was trying to like
freezer.
Come up with some reason where she was not but yeah it was just hard to see you were just like sitting in the pool at one point with like a blank look on your face. I remember, and I was like walked out there or something and cracked a beer or whatever. You know, it took you like 30 seconds to realize there was someone even in the vicinity. You're just like, you know,
it was just someone
on your face. But okay, so you returned from Vegas.
And at that point, then I just went into like focus mode, you know, like I had to kind of like focus my life into like the only two things I was doing was working on the divorce and then like physically going to my job at the fire department. And that was about it. I couldn't do podcasting. I couldn't play cards. I couldn't. My mind just wasn't right. I was just like, I just got to get this girl out of the house as fast as humanly possible. And
first of all, yeah, well, I can't even talk about the legal issues, but it is pretty crazy. You know, she files for divorce and is suing you, and she has a right to be in the house.
Yeah.
She can't leave. How long did it take before you could actually even get out of the house? Wasn't it like 4 or 5 months or something?
No, it was two, which was to two. Me, okay, felt like forever. But I've been told that's very, very fast and good.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's horror stories, guys at work, like they're having to live together for like 9 months or a year before they finally get out. So, or legally the one that leaves is going to forfeit all the profits in the property or something. And so they just have this miserable relationship of sleeping on the couch. Like, oh God, it sounds terrible. But, we were both working quite a bit at the time. And so we weren't often at the house at the same time. And we certainly weren't in the same room. But yeah, it was very, like primal to all of a sudden, you know, you trust this person with literally your life to now, I can't even trust her with the password to my email, you know, like,
right.
Was
she doing any like little passive aggressive stuff where like you're watching the TV? And she comes over and, you know, accidentally kicks the cord out. Or, I mean, you know, like little stuff where she was just trying to ratchet up the.
There was. Yeah. And it kind of got to the point to where we couldn't, like, it was just like, okay, we just got to make an appointment to go see the mediator. Look, we're both not working these 2 days next week. You want to go the 25th or the 26th? Like, either one's worse for me. Well, I, you know, I just don't even want to think about that right now. And then I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, if we were both on the same page, we could have been separated and out of the house and, you know, 4 days or whatever, but it was just this bullshit thing of like, you know, her putting it off and then and like that. And there was two times that I remember that I realized that the only way I'm going to get this chick to sign off on this stuff is I got to have sex with her. She's sexually frustrated and she just won't, she has no release, and this is the only way this shit's going to fucking work. And so there was twice that I had to do that. And then I remember it was so repulsive when I was doing it, but I knew that this was the only way to get her the fuck out. And so I had to do it. Maybe there was another way, but it probably would have taken longer. I'm sure it would have.
Invited me to move in. That would have sent her out the fucking door pretty fast.
You know, my folks actually offered to come in and live while she was there. And I almost took them up on it. Because just make it so awkward for her when she's there that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But,
so how is hate fucking, Steve? I've never done that before.
It's surprisingly harder than you think because,
were you pulling her hair a little more severely than you normally do? Or what was the,
you know, I don't even remember. I just remember it was,
I have to go into details.
It was really hard for me to, rise to the occasion. Because
chick's an info, basically.
Was that?
So chick's kind of an info. That was part of the appeal, obviously. When you're saying you knew her personally that she was feeling all this anxiety because she hadn't gotten fucked.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what you're saying.
And you know what? After both times after it, we went and saw the mediator. Like it was like instant.
Right.
You know, so it worked. Yeah. I don't know how much longer she would have strung it out, but I could tell you, dude, I wouldn't have been able to live with her much longer. I really couldn't. Oh, man. But the lesson learned is don't get married or in a serious relationship when you barely know the person. Most people would say that's blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
It is to me now.
Well, I'm a romantic, Steve. So I, you know, you just chose wrong. We didn't get into the real crusher of the story here, Steve. You have whiskey every night.
I do. Around eight o'clock or so, I get my little scotch glass and then I fill it up with ice cubes and then I pour a couple shots of scotch in there. And there was a bottle when I came back from vacation that was, you know, if you got a fifth of whiskey, 750 milliliters. It had about a quarter of scotch left in it, and you know, so three quarters of the bottle was gone, and then there was a brand new one right next to it. And so I open up the thing, I pour my drink. She'd already gone to work, and she was going to be, you know, flying around for 4 days or whatever as a flight attendant. And I drank it, and within about, it was less than an hour. Man, I was sitting on the toilet, throwing up into the trash can, and just violently ill all night. And so part of me was like, maybe, no, she wouldn't do that. Would she really? And that's when I told you about it, and you're like, do you still have that bottle? You should get that thing freaking tested. And I'm like,
I mentioned maybe you should get tested after you'd already emptied it and threw it out, which is too bad.
I know. I threw it out and then I threw it in the trash and I was like, okay. At that point, it wasn't really a thought in my head of like, should I get it tested until you mentioned something? But I remember thinking, I can't trust this girl for anything. I don't even want to eat any food that's in this house. You know what I mean? Like who the fuck knows what she's done? Yeah. So that was definitely an eye opener.
I like to. Weren't you like scrubbing? You'd have to scrub every plate and fork before you used it or something.
That was just straight paranoia, I think. But after the.
Did you actually drink from that bottle more than once, though? This is the funny part, I think. Didn't you get real sick one night and then you did it like the next night? And you're like, I thought it took more than one night before the.
No. Oh, after the first night, that was the only thing I could think of what it would be. And then I was like, okay, I can't trust this girl for anything. I just got to get her the fuck out of the house. And I don't know, maybe that would have given me closure one way or the other if I had gotten that thing tested. But at the time, I was just like, okay, what do I got to do? What paperwork? What did the lawyer say? I was just in focus mode, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of the story. Oh, I was trying to help you with come out with ways, Steve, to like punish her. You were listening to that. This is how traumatized you were. I'm trying to think the best one I had. I like this one here, because the trying to kill her without hiring a hitman. You know, I mean, you don't want legal. I thought this was a good one. Get her to come back. Come in the States, honey. I miss you. Come like financially, you know, send her some pictures. This is the jewelry I bought you. I want to, you know, buy you a new car. I just need to see you. Somehow get her back in the States and then like go on like a, hey, let's go camping or something. Like, she probably hates that kind of shit. Somehow in the mountains. And then whenever you're there, just pick up with your car keys and sprint away. And she's just trapped in the mountains without a cell phone. And then you be like, oh, she wandered off. You know yeah. what I mean?
Oh, that'd be great.
Or just leave her at the airport, you know, something like that.
Yeah, just never pick her up.
By the way, I bought a new house. Yeah. And then give her a GPS to my fucking house, man. I'll fucking take out the fucking pimp hand if you have to. But I don't know if we weren't really going there. It was a fun mental experiment. I think Carlos might have had a couple good contributions to that discussion too. I don't know what he came up with. Hey, I think his was direct. He didn't like my creativity there. No, but no. I don't think he actually liked the violent option. But we were trying to come up with. Well, you had a couple ideas of getting like telling her, honey, I got some awful news. I have AIDS. Weren't you coming?
Oh, yes, that's right.
And I was like, Steve, if we're going in this direction, you want to get a real existential panic? Yeah, you know, so that's where I liked in the woods thing. Just you know.
Yeah, I kind of like the HIV one. That's pretty. That's a pretty good one. And then just never call again. Oh damn.
Huh. Then the other one was: didn't she like contact your friends and claim abuse? Like she was even like getting into your life on another level.
That's what was so scary about it, was like I come back from vacation and I got to do all this freaking damage control because she's been talking shit about me for the last like month. And, you know, from their perspective, I wiped out all the bank accounts and left her with no money out here by herself. What were some other shit that I did? I don't remember. That was the biggest one. And it was like, I think they even like gave her some money because they felt bad or something. I'm like, she just has 23 grand. What are you? Are you kidding me? She's painting this like poor pity party story me like I don't have money to eat. And like, wow. She was very convincing though. Very, very convincing. Very manipulative. And I mean, it just took one phone call when I got back to my buddies to clear that shit up. But still for, yeah, they wanted to like kick my ass when I got home. Like, what the hell have you done to your wife? And then now you're divorcing her after you steal all of the money that she's earned. And like, what?
Well, that, yeah, maybe perversely that should make you feel a little better that you're not stupid and she was conning other people.
Yeah. She
like,
did.
They thought she was an innocent party here. They thought she was the sweet wife too, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective before, but yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. Yeah, she was very good at that. Very good at that.
I don't know. So anyways, there's the story. Yeah.
There it is. It's out. Yeah.
We have promised that we would get the whole thing. And there's probably still a million details if you go back to...
There was just in the back of my mind, I just couldn't do it knowing that her name is on those properties and if she realized that or... she could take advantage of it and then I'd be right back in the fucking shit show, you know? So I was like, let me just square everything. And then I can talk about it on the air.
And, yeah. And of course it was always, I think you're like, okay, let's just, if I have to give her 25,000 more, it'll be fine. 50K. And then, yeah. Okay, it might be 75K. It's like, well, I really need this to go. Okay. Fucking 100K.
it was just to the point to where it was like my dad said, he's all, you're going to write a check. It's just a question of how big, how, right. You know, her price was another 75. Yeah, I looking, maybe I could have got it for a little bit cheaper. I don't know, but whatever. I was just glad to see her go.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. So what else should we talk about, Stevie?
What's that?
I'm sorry. What did you say?
I was going to say, I set one other goal. This one's probably the most, ambitious but I want to make 250K. I want to make a quarter mil in earnings this year.
Wow.
Okay. So I thought about writing 200, but I know that 200 is doable. Like if I just really dug down and really put my axe to the grindstone, I can make 200.
So does this mean a lot of overtime shifts where you don't trade with people afterwards? You just work the extra time? I mean,
what a lot of this will be. It'll basically be working the fire season in the summer, assuming that they'll still have brush fires like they have, and I have no reason not to think that they would. It'd be that. Starting doing real money with the trading options.
Okay.
And then just more poker. Just putting in more hours. But I think I can make more money at trading. I just haven't gone real money yet because it's like I'll have like two or three good days and then I'll have one really bad day. But the bets to me look the same on the bad day that they are on the good day. So is it just shoving all in with aces, the guy calls with eights, and you get unlucky? Is that what it is? Or is it, am I missing some of the setup? So each one of those that I'm not really sure about, I email it to my my coach, and then he's either yes or no, and that's the learning process. So I feel like I'm there.
I was just saying how you're successful at everything, and it'll work, but you were a failure in marriage, so I guess I should amend that statement. I don't know, Steve. You are the optimist, and I am the pessimist / skeptic here. So, like, first of all, because you're so cautious / sensible with how you're going about this, I would think it's going to be hard to spin it up that much. Like, what do you have? Like, just because you only want 1% at a time for each trade, right? I mean, it's just you have to run really good just to double that up, whatever your investment is, right?
True,
I mean, I don't
know
if you have an idea that you can possibly double this every month. Is that 2,000 to 4,000 to 8,000 to 16? I mean, is that kind of in your mind how it goes, where you can actually 40x your investment over the years if you're really smart with it?
Judging by my results, I should be able to make about $25 an hour doing trading.
Okay.
So now the limitation is, you can only trade from about 7:30 in the morning until 11:30 in the afternoon. I mean, 12 o'clock, you should... Yeah, that's even dangerous. I would not make a purchase after 11:30 unless I saw like a super sweet setup, because the market's going to close an hour and a half after that. And if you don't sell it by then, you're just fucking stuck. So you got to kind of time it right, you know, and you don't want to do it in the first hour of trading because it's so damn volatile. You have no idea. There's no pattern to look at to see what to try to predict what's coming next. You know what I mean? You just kind of got to let it go. And then it's either going to be going down or it's going to be going up or it's kind of going to go sideways. And that gives you at least some prediction factors there, you know? So I guess my point is my window's kind of limited. So
right,
if I can only trade Monday through Thursday are the best days. Fridays are pretty volatile, so I'd rather not trade on those days if I can help it. If I can get in a 4-hour day twice a week, that's an extra couple hundred bucks a month, or a couple hundred bucks a week. I haven't done the math on this on how I'm actually going to get to 250K, but you're bringing up an interesting point. Maybe
well,
it's not
so, going to be... Your average trades are like $200-$300 each, kind of thing.
Like 120.
Okay. Well, if your bankroll, if you ever had a hot streak here, or if you wanted to take the money you have set aside for a plane and put it in here, and if you were making $500-$600 trades, then hypothetically it's now $100 an hour job, right? So, yeah. But like I said, from the beginning, I know there's like supercomputers who are doing this all the time. Most, a pretty large majority of American financial transactions are through software people have set up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, my point is not only you're competing against that, you're competing against people who do nothing but this all day long.
True.
And have been doing it for, so you do seem to have access to a smart guy, and you'll probably work out, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's a fun game. It's I didn't realize like how much there is to look at. I used to like almost four table, look at like four different stocks at the same time. But now I'm focusing more on like one, maybe two, looking at them weeks out, you know, and then all the way down to the 1 minute mark. And it's, yeah, the patterns are interesting. It's like there'll be these, they call them moving averages. So, you know, it'll be this line that's going across the graph, and it'll be the average cost of this share over, you know, the last 200 minutes or the 200 units, however long the reversal bars and the bars are timed, if it's 1 minute, 2 minute, 5 minute, like that. So you can kind of put together these patterns and you look at different ones, and it can kind of touch the line and then bounce up, or it can break through the line. If and it does that in the 1 minute, it's likely to do it in the two, and then likely to do it in the five. And it's like this kind of matrix that you have to look through and try to guess what it's going to do next.
Well, it sounds like, I guess the key is, it's even if it's break even, you're having fun. You're playing a game you enjoy. So I didn't really think about that level, but yeah. Well, you know, there's a guy at the casino I know, this older guy. He's got a lot of money, and he's pretty mad. He's playing poker and usually has a bet on a horse race. Plus, he also gambles with the stock market. Every day transactions back and forth. This, hey, you're not going to believe this stock went up. You know. It's fun for him, so he needs the constant stimulation. But once I asked him, because he has a little app for his trading, I'm like, do you mind if I look at that? I'm curious.
Yeah.
And he's, no, that's okay. And I forget how much was in the account, probably like $300,000 or $400,000.
Wow.
But then I looked at the fee. You know, I wanted to break down. I wanted to find out how much he had paid in fees over the years. I don't know if it took.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if he looked at it, but like. This year, I want to just come up with a number. It was like definitely over like $20,000. I want to say it was like $37,000 in fees.
That's the rake.
He had paid, yes, pretty exactly.
At
the end of the year, he probably is break even or a little bit, but it's served the purpose of letting him play this game.
Yeah, yeah.
Just sometimes the poker games aren't running, and the horses, you know, he doesn't have a horse, so the stock market fulfills that need for some people, but. Yeah. Anyways, so Steve, I don't know. This is probably public knowledge, anyways. If you want to just look it up, that we could find this out. What is your base salary as a fireman, if you don't mind saying? Let me.
I just got my check,
Let me take a guess here.
Okay, go ahead.
In my mind, your base pay was. I wanted to say like 85-90K a year, but now when you're talking about how much money you got to make, it's got to be. 120K a year or something.
That's about right. Let me think. Hang on. 3,300 times 26. I'm doing the math right now. About 112. I feel last year I made more than that, though. Last year I made, I think, like 120. I must have had a couple of overtime shifts sprinkled in there.
Okay.
Or I'm a little off on the math. I would say it's plus or minus 5 on that.
That is fucking ridiculous, by the way, how much money you make. But no, you've worked. But okay, there you go. You got that. I don't know if you're factoring. You don't really, from your rental property in Vegas, or do you have two of them? You don't really. They just kind of pay the mortgage, right?
Oh, I didn't think of that. Yeah, I'm getting $500 extra a month from one of them. Okay. Although I am refinancing one of them, and I'm taking it from. I think I got. 20 years left on the loan, and I'm putting it to 15. So that payment's going to go up a little bit, and that extra 500 is basically just going to get dumped into that to pay it off in like 12 or something. So I won't be getting any extra cash from there, but I do have a positive cash flow on that, which is nice.
Of course, Steve, I'm the degenerate gambler, so I'm going to give you the bad advice. But with the trading thing, once you feel comfortable, I think, you know, put an extra 6,000 right away into your account. That's the 500 a month you get from. I mean, the worst case scenario, Steve, is you make 130,000 this year, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
True. Yeah.
So, if the trading is what you like, and what I mean, I just, you've set the bar kind of low here with $25 an hour. I think to make it worth your while, you should be making whatever $55 an hour, whatever you make for the fire department.
For the fire department. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have to run your roll up a little bit, but if you're not at that point of comfort, but yeah, that's just my first thought. It's, you know.
I think I'm going to start with 6K, and then that'll allow me to kind of keep the same bets that I've been doing the play money with, 120. And, okay. You know, that keeps it at like 2%. And it's, I guess I look at it like a poker tournament. You know what I mean? Just keep keep it as a small portion of your bankroll, and then, you know, your risk of ruin is, you know, only 15% or whatever it is.
Right. Well, you're the man who's soon to have two planes, Steve, so don't take financial advice from me. But it just when you're trying to make that extra, whatever it is, even with the extra – plus, yeah, the overtime, I don't know, Steve. In Vegas, you have – you love Vegas.
Yeah.
You really want to give up your summer just to make
– when I'll shout out for the GSOP. I won't miss that.
Okay.
But, are you going for that?
Very doubtful.
Really?
I told myself that I was going to take a whole year off from tournaments. We'll see if I can manage that. But I mean, maybe like an LA tournament. I think maybe I talked about this before. Like I need to win my way back into Vegas. Like do some LA tournaments here, and then if I have a 50K score, then there we go, 15K to Vegas. But it'll be hard. I'll probably come out there for five days and play like the monster stack in a couple of win tournaments maybe, but I'm going to have it. Right now, I'm just, of course, coming off a miserable month. I'm still back. I'm still on still owe taxes to the state of California from 2017. I got a lot of – I don't have a lot of money, Steve. So if somehow I were to make, a couple real – I would have to run good here, real solid, and save money to even think about Vegas, I think. But
okay.
I'm over it, Steve. I mean, the tournaments I have, I love making day twos in tournaments and hearing that the money bubble has passed and that I've got a lot of chips, you know, otherwise it's just, it's just not a good investment of my time.
Okay. I think I'm going to play. There's a 1K double stack in the middle of June. I think I'm going to play that. I'll probably sell some action again this year for some of the bigger tournaments. What I did last year, I think I had at 7K in buy-ins, and then I cashed out 9K. So I made 2K.
Okay.
But you know what? That's another thing that is the wild card in this too, because some of these bigger tournaments during the summer, if you bink the thing, you could get 100K.
Right.
So that's the, you're only playing 15 tournaments in 2 weeks, but anything could happen. Maybe not even that many. So that could be the wild card too.
Yeah. I was always said, I'm waiting for that. Like I thought for sure at some point I was going to have a big score.
Yeah.
You know, 300,000 plus I would, but I might, at that point it might be just getting me even for tournaments. You know what I mean? Or I've already gone broke and I'm someone else is paying for 98% of it. So I don't make any money off it. You know what I mean? So, Yeah, tournaments, big thumb down. Plus, I don't know, I would think 3 years ago, I would have been touting my tournament skills and thought I was really good, and that was just results. But I think I had a pretty good edge on people, and I think that's pretty small now. Because I'm not playing a lot online.
Yeah.
And you just got to stay on top of it. I mean, there's people who just live poker 24 hours a day, so.
Yeah.
I've learned how to be sit in a poker room and be patient and grind long hours. And, if I work 50 hours a week, 20 hours a week, it's just pretty much break even poker where the game just isn't good. And then there's profitability, and hopefully, 10, 15 hours a week, 50 hours a month, it's just there's wild action. And that's how you pay the bills with those times.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you gotta play long hours to be there for that.
Yeah.
And to have a bankroll for where, when it doesn't go well, you can try it the next time. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, I don't know. I actually got a couple of hands, Stevie.
Oh, nice. Okay. Let me tell you guys quickly about Elliot Rowe. Get your 7-minute tilt buster by clicking on the link in the show notes. And I am super excited because Elliot is coming out with his new masterclass. I have access to this right now, and I'm checking it out and kind of giving him some reviews with some other guys that are going to be touting it. I'm pretty excited. This is it's a neat long class, a lot of content. I think it's going to be well over 100 hours, but I could be wrong. Super excited for that. So I'll put out the link when it comes out. But, click on the link in the show notes for the 7-minute tilt buster. It's free. You put it right on your phone and listen to it before you play. Okay, Mikey, what do we got?
couple cash hands from the last couple nights.
Okay.
First one I discuss, Under the Gun, one, raises to 20.
Okay. Are we 5-5, 2-5?
This is 2-5.
2-5. NL. Okay, Under the Gun raises to 20?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I'm in the hijack with two sixes, two red sixes.
6-6. Diamond Heart. Okay. Who's Under the Gun? You played with him before?
I don't know. Yeah, recreational player. He's not going to be, I guess, pretty standard opening range.
Okay.
Probably some, there's going to be some a little too much crap in there, some offsuit broadways maybe, and a couple hands, but not opening super wide.
Okay.
Again, that's the problem now is like the mainstays of the game who are casual players, they're just kind of trying to break even sort of thing, not do anything stupid.
Yeah.
So you make money off them because, yeah, I mean, you're just never going to pay them off, and sometimes they are going to pay you off. But this guy would be like the decent amateur who it's a good. He loses a little bit of money, but he's okay.
Okay.
I personally think this is a call 100% of the time. I don't know. Do you see any reason for doing anything else?
And the only thing I was going to say is, I think in the scenario you described, I'm just calling here every time. But if this was some type of kind of loosey-goosey player that maybe not positionally aware and you have some tight guys to your left, then I might isolate him, you know. There's some people that you don't want in the pot, then I might isolate him to get position, get heads up in position with a pair against a guy that, you know, has a wider range than sixes. I'm just flipping it a call here.
Okay, I agree. I called. And we get three other callers.
Okay.
Cut off the button and the big blind.
Okay, they all throw in 20. Okay, so we got $100 in the pot?
Yes.
Alrighty. So with $100 in the pot, UTG, we're in hero hijack with two red sixes, the cutoff button, big blind, go to C flop. Okay, and what do we got for the flop?
King 10-5.
King 10-5. Okay. Do you remember the suits, or is it even relevant?
It was a rainbow flop. I can't remember. Yeah, it's not a factor in this analyzing this hand.
Okay. What's big blind and UTG do?
Big blind, it checks to me, so the two people check.
Okay. And it's on us.
I think checking here 100%.
Yeah, I can't come up with a reason to bet when we have four other people in the pot and this. And these Broadway cards kind of hit everyone's range. I'm checking as well.
I check, and the other two players check as well.
Okay. Can I predict the turn?
Sure.
Six of clubs.
No.
Six of spades.
It's a seven.
Oh, wow. All right.
Didn't see that coming. The I can't remember if this brought a flush draw or not. I think it might have completed the rainbow.
Okay.
First two people check, it's on me again.
Yeah, check.
I checked. I'll just give the rest of the action and tell you what I was thinking, kind of. Cutoff checks, the button bets 40.
Okay.
And the Under the Gun player calls.
Okay, so big blind folds, UTG calls 40, and now it's on us.
Yes.
Okay, we got 180 in the pot. It's 40 on us. When he bets 40 into that, I mean, is he ever checking a king on the flop there when it checks all the way to him? I don't think so. Wouldn't he bet a king there?
That was my that was my thinking, is that we had two people here with mediocre pairs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think, is a 10.
Someone could have queens, I guess, and the other guy could have ace 10.
UTG could have queens, I think, but I think anyone behind you is raising with queens there, right?
Anyways, I raised to 200.
Okay.
And they both folded.
Nice. Oh, and the cutoff got out as well, right?
Yeah, everybody folded. Yeah.
Okay. I like your thinking, dude.
So anyways, this is kind of a spot where, like I said, I'm really financially not in great shape, but I was like kind of told myself, you know, like, I'm like, if I see a spot, I'm going to take it, mm-hmm. kind of thing. You know what I mean? So I thought, yeah, I mean, somehow someone could have a set of sevens on the turn, I guess. But, you know, but then it's, I would not be firing any river, by the way. I'd be just giving up, I think.
Six?
Well, yeah, six, you know, but otherwise I was, so I don't know, probably decent pros don't like this move. Because I didn't pick up any equity on the turn.
Okay.
But anyways, I liked it. I saw a spot, and like I said, I checked. And, it, well, you know, this was exploitive, too. The button I thought was very stabby. If anyone folded him, I thought he was going to be betting a fair amount.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, I
like I like it. I like the way you broke it down. And sometimes, and you can get this in live poker that you can't really in online, is, you know, being able to see him. And like you said, he's kind of stabby. And when he just confirmed that for you by betting 40 into 100 right there the second time it was checked to him, like, it, he's just never has a king there.
Right. He did say he had a 10, but I don't, yeah, probably. He probably had a little something of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, I like that. And that's something I think I used to do more of, you know, probably not ideally, but so that's a spot I need to remember. Any of these multi-way pots where it checks through on the flop?
Yeah.
Rarely is someone slow playing.
Yeah.
Some people are just trying to pot control, you know, top pair and stuff, or maybe, you know. But a lot of times, I think you can play it like this.
Yeah.
Again, if it was a big card, I don't think I would have done this. I kind of, but it was kind of semi-improvisational. But once it got to me, I'm like, I took some time. I'm going to make it look like I've got a hand here and raise if either of these guys bet it. So
yeah.
Anyways.
Cool. Well done, sir.
The next hand is also at 2-5, okay. Although we have the straddle going.
Oh, okay. So 2-5-10.
Yes.
Right.
And I have ace king in the small blind, and it folds to me.
Oh, right.
It's offsuit. I think it's, let's see, ace of clubs and a king of diamonds I have written here.
Okay. I'm assuming the big blind did something other than fold.
Sizing. The straddle called. The big blind folded, and then the straddle person called.
Okay, and what did you raise it to? 30?
I raised it to 40.
40, okay.
So there's 85 in the pot now.
Okay, so you said the straddle call. I'll call 40. Okay, so we got 85 in the pot?
Yes.
85, should be 87? Well, did they take the $2 drop or whatever, huh? Okay.
Well, I would have been the $2. That was part of
That's right. Okay, yeah. Okay, and who's the straddle? What's Is he the only one doing the straddle, or is the whole table doing it?
I can't remember. I think there might have been one person. There might have been one or two people not doing it, so it wasn't like a steady straddle.
Okay.
It might have been at the point. Sometimes, usually late night, like 1 a.m., we usually have that straddle going, so everybody, at the what-the-fuck hours, you know, who gives a shit that it's – but that I can't remember exactly.
Okay.
This guy is a casual player who – yeah, just not very good, I think. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, not horrible, but the flop is queen, queen, nine with two hearts.
Heart. And we have club diamond, so we got none of that. Okay. All right, action's on us. Into 85. I'm not checking here. I'm trying to think of sizing. 35 feels a little small. I feel like we're betting for value. I'm going to say 35 to like 55, but I'm trying to come up with a better number than that. I don't know, 45.
I bet 50.
Okay.
From talking, you know, I have been studying the cash game a little bit. This might be one of those spots where you bet real small,
okay,
like for value, but also like He's never folding a pair here anyways.
Yeah.
Obviously, queen is always raising. You can even go on like 30, 35 here.
Okay.
And a lot of times they'll do that. And then, I don't know, Steve.
You get away cheaper when he has a queen, a nine, or a pair.
Yeah, I guess. Although, I still might even call a raise here, depending on the villain. This guy was pretty aggressive, I think, in his playing a lot of hands, but he might call here with nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I guess maybe would be an argument for just check calling here too. But
he might call with nothing.
Well, like 50 bucks is a value bet, like you said, but not just because he might have hearts or Jack 10. He might have some other weird stuff there. He might have Ace 4, is what I'm saying.
Well, that would be great if he called with Ace 4.
Well, that's why I'm saying I like betting. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm agreeing with you.
I thought you were saying he could have worse hands than ours, so we should check and hope he doesn't bet. And I'm like, that makes no sense.
We could check and let him bluff at it, is what I'm saying.
Okay. All right.
But anyways, I bet 50 the turn, and he calls, and the turn is the Ace of Diamonds.
Pretty cool. Ace of Diamonds. Okay, so we got 150 or 185 in the pot with Ace King off. We get a flop of Queen Queen 9, two hearts, and the turn is the Ace of Diamonds. We have the King of Diamonds. We have, you don't remember if the other queen was a diamond?
I don't.
Okay. I say just continue on. Let's see, what are we going to get value from here if he's got like, Jack 10 will call. Wouldn't he be three betting there from the small blind if he had 10s plus? Is he calling there with 10s and jacks? I would think he would 3-bet, right?
Probably, yes.
Okay, so we can probably take that out. We can probably take queens, kings, and aces out. But then there's the... We'll get value from worse aces. We might get value from Broadway draws.
Right.
We do block that a bit, like king, jack, king, 10.
We should also mention his flop call. We didn't really range him. It's like, well, what does he do with a queen there?
Yeah.
Like, how often... How many queens do we now put in his range on the turn? And, you know, that's hard to – he's got a lot of, you know, pre-flop, of course. He's got, you know, a lot of queens. But I think we should point out, you know, the flush draw there. So that's another incentive to raise the queen right there.
Yeah.
And even though if he's been watching me, I can be very barely, he might not have the patience for that and immediately wants to, you know, raise and hope that I have something kind of thing. So, I think that's part of the decision-making here where this is – he doesn't have a queen here. Like basically, that we're good here, like 95% of the time. I'm thinking, right?
I think so. I think he's going to call there with the nine, and he's going to call with the. He's probably calling with pairs under nines too.
On the turn?
No, on the flop.
Well, yeah.
Sorry, I'm bouncing around here. On the flop, when you bet 50 and he calls, you're right. We should arrange him.
So on the
queens, I think you're right. He's probably raising most of the time because that's a pretty draw heavy board. With the draw out there, Broadway's, there's gutter balls that make a straight. I think you're right. I think he's raising a queen there. The nine, in his shoes, I'm probably just calling with a nine. So we can keep nines in his range from his call on the flop. Pairs, like maybe he's tossing away deuces and threes, but I would think he's calling fours, fives, sixes, sevens.
Well, to go to the turn here, I guess this is my question, is if we bet big with the ace here, thinking we have the best hand, you know, 95% of the time, mm-hmm. should we just bet it big and hope for max value that he has an ace somehow? Or are we trying to be a little cute and check here and let either him bluff or bet the river? Because I'm just thinking of his – if we bet big here, probably with a bluff or a bet, I'd be betting like 140 or something.
Mm-hmm.
What is he calling with? Is it worse? What should we be targeting just one street of value here, maybe? Let's say we could see his hand face up and he had king nine.
Okay.
Would we check here and then just try to get some value on the river? Or hope he bets it somehow?
I would rather go for value now. Just go because, for value. And my reasoning is this, is because we keep in his flush draws. They're going to call now. They're either going to call and beat us on the river, or they're just not going to put another dime in the pot. You know, so any two hearts that he have, we get value from that.
Okay.
We get value from worse aces. And, I mean, he should be folding a nine here, I think, to a double barrel. But maybe we get lucky. And like you said, if he's got king nine, he flicks in a call if it's not too big. The thing is, we got to make the bet. It's like, how do we get a nine to call and the flush draws? And I don't know that you can go small enough and not give him the right odds to do that. You know, I think I would rather target the flush draws, the broadways that might be calling for the gut shot, and weaker aces.
Yeah, I think a big bet. He's folding the nine. Yeah, pretty much 100%. So I just thought he's if I bet here, I could hope he have an ace, then I could bet twice.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. I checked. I don't know. Your idea of charging the flush draws, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
But I just thought he's going to be folding so often here. I'm not getting called, and I'd rather bet the river and get called by the 9X.
Okay.
But I don't know. That's what
but
I was
thinking.
But I
mean, like, what if a king comes or a jack or a 10? Is 9 really calling you there, you know? The turn, you also get value from Jack 10, which is open-ended.
Right.
You get value from, I think, I don't know, if King 10. How deep were you guys? I should have asked that.
I think like $1,000. Well, a lot of these Broadway stuff, he's not. If I bet 130 on the turn, 140, whatever, 150, he's going to be folding the King 10.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So yeah. If I check, he could hit a king or a 10 on the river and have a pair now.
And think, hit a jack and make it straight, you know?
Yeah. Well, anyways, I thought I had this guy pretty crushed.
Okay.
I thought the way to make the most money was to check for whatever reason. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure. This is not wizardry. This was just my instinct for whatever, you know, like I said, I don't even know if I can defend it. Probably supposed to bet the turn there. I think probably most people would agree with that.
Okay.
But anyways, the river is a three of clubs. So he checks back. I guess we should talk about his range now. He never has a queen.
No, I think... I mean, I suppose I could go through the Rolodex and pull out 1.5 times that I've seen this per 100 where they somehow just play a queen really weird, but it's always by like an older grandma that, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. We'll just take queen out.
So
when he checks back, does he have an ace?
I think he bets the flush draws too now, right? He knows he can't just wait.
I think so, yeah. I think he bets the flush draws. He might even bet... And maybe he's trying to get cute, and he has a weak ace in top pair now, and he doesn't want to let you off the hook or something.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That or a nine or like eights and below.
I think eights and below he has to bluff it. Maybe he doesn't bluff at them now. But again, some of those pairs, he's certainly folding on the flop too.
Yeah, probably the lowest ones. But on a flop of queen nine, and you bet 50 into 85, I mean, I think he's calling with eights, sevens, sixes.
Okay, but I guess the point is here, now with this river that we love, are you betting to get called by those hands? What are you thinking now? With 180 in the pot,
We should target an ace and a nine. And just accept that you're going to lose if he hung around there after the flop with eights and below. Hope it wasn't threes and bet to get value from an ace or a nine.
Well, ace or a nine are two pretty different kind of hands here. If you could see his hand face up, and if one of them he had ace five and one of them he had king nine, what would your bet sizing be for each one of them?
Okay, let's see. Into 185... If I saw that he had ace five on queen, queen nine, ace three board, no flush draw, I'm going to bet like, I'm debating between like 175 and 210 right now if it do the over. I think with the ace there, I got to go like 210.
And this is even though you can see his cards, he has a nine, you are going to like over bet the pot hoping he gets called by a nine.
No, if I could see that he had king nine, I think at that point I'm betting like 75.
But an ace, you're betting 170.
No, I'm betting, I'd overpot it just a little bit. So the pot's 185, I'd go over that 20, 30 bucks. I'd go like 210.
So which one, now we can't see his cards.
Yes.
But you said we're targeting an eight, we want to get paid by an ace or a nine. So which are you just adding them together and dividing them by two, Steve? Or what are you, what's your bet size?
That's a damn good question. Well, together they're 285, so that'd be 140, be like 140 bucks. I don't know. Would that be the right way to approach it? Just bet 140 and split the difference?
I don't think
a nine's calling 140, are they?
No.
So then you really only get an ace.
If you think he's got more nines or small pairs in his range, basically than an ace, then you should be betting 50 or 60.
Yeah.
To bet small. Well, I decided that I wanted to try to get some value here. And I really didn't care if he had a nine. I'm focusing on he checked back an ace on the turn.
Okay.
That possibility. So I'm targeting weaker aces specifically.
Okay.
I don't know if this is white magic, the helmet. You look smart when you have it.
Yeah.
But I bet 320.
Interesting. Okay.
And he called. And I showed my hand, and he showed his ace. So.
Huh. He didn't show you the kicker?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it was, you know, but.
Probably didn't matter. Interesting. You know, maybe this. Okay. Because, like, if we look at how many cards are left, right? Okay, we have one ace accounted for, and there's one on the board, so there's only two left in the deck. But there's only one nine on the board, so that means there's three left. So I would kind of argue that he might have more nines than... Well, maybe not, because he's not calling your raise there with nine deuce, but he is with ace deuce.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is how an actual pro would go about it, Steve. They would, like, think of all the combos and what's the... But basically, I thought there was enough. If there was the same number of combos as nine as aces, let's just say here.
Yeah.
And let's just say this guy is getting is a donk who's going to call with the nine, you know, 100% of the time, six for six. But if he's got an ace, and you bet big, he's going to call two out of six times.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? It's 600 versus 300. It's profitable to go for it big here. I mean, I don't know. And this guy, the previous night, I should say, this guy really got pumped up. He won a big hand off me where he called a three bet with king six and turned trips and, you know.
Oh.
So I kind of, yeah, he did real well the night before. So I think that was my factor into it here, that that he's maybe even almost still on winner's tilt. And he was up a little bit on this night. And again, I show a lot of, I get caught a lot. I bluff about as much as anybody there, for sure.
Okay.
So, I like how I played it. I thought it was worth the chance to go for the big value here.
Yeah.
Just like how, that. You know, he's watching me play, how I, you know, so that's all kind of exploitative tough stuff. And I don't even know if he's calling 50 bucks with a nine. So I guess this would be, this is trying to go for max value.
Yeah, definitely.
This is, you know, Brokos has the one TPE video, targeting value.
Targeting value, yes. I've watched that so many times. It's great.
A lot of it is just hoping the guy has the hand you want him to have.
Yeah.
When you have a big hand, he also has a big hand. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, he's got the set just under yours or whatever. Yeah. Well done, dude. That was a nice one. I would never have bet 320 there. That's impressive. I think I would have settled on like 140, and I would have won about 180 less than you. So that's good.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a villain guy. Not that he was not like the guy I almost fought with. Not an egomaniac, but you know, I would say a little more ego than other people. Doesn't want to fold the winner. A little like me there. You know what I mean? He's gonna, if he thinks there's any chance you're gonna bluff, he's going to be calling. And so I was just hoping ace.
Yeah.
Like I said, the smaller pairs, and there might have been a bunch of shit that could have called for a $60-$70 bet. But like I said, when you say split the difference like 140, the nines fold and the aces call.
Yeah, so just go for the big one. So maybe
let's be greedy and make it a little bigger with the ace, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Rather than bet $45 and get called every time, go for the max value. And even though you called a lot less, the times that you don't, you know, the ones that you did, more than makes up for those string of 45.
And this is also, I should point out, this is like 2-5 poker. And it's different than the 5-5, where I'll never see Alex in that casino again. You know what I mean? Like, it's just all the crushers have left, I should point out, too.
Oh, really? What happened?
Well, the 5-5, well, that's not true. The 5-5 is now making a comeback. But for the most part, in a 2-5 game, I'm always going to be one of the best two or three players on the table.
Yeah.
And there's rarely going to be someone who's, but before at the 5-5, you know, you've heard me complain about how tough the games were. You know, like Alex said, this was the toughest 5-5 he's ever seen. And he's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
Because there was top crushers there who just didn't want to be in LA. They want to live in San Diego. You know what I mean? guys that can beat 5-10 or higher who just happen to be playing this kind of crazy 5-5 game, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I can think more creatively in this group. Like I said, when I'm trying to make little angly plays like this against other, I mean, no, it still works against anybody. But I don't know. I just have to look for these spots.
Yeah.
And, so a couple things. Yeah. So, when I see these spots, I got to take them. And I also like the sixes hand rather than ISOing. This is something that I've been doing a lot. Like, save. It's just if I squeeze there to 120 or whatever, 100, if there's a couple people in it, immediately the pot's huge.
Yeah.
And I see bet and they call and I'm already fucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So get in cheap on the flop and then just out play people post flop. And it's kind of, it's almost like sort of passive pre-flop play makes any plays you make post more believable.
Yeah.
Like they'll think your range is stronger. You know what I mean?
And on top of that, you know, I mean, I was talking to, who the hell was I talking to? Anyways, the more cards that come out, if you're better than they are, you have more information and, you know, you've seen, more decisions be made, you know, so put yourself in a spot where you have to make a lot of decisions, like getting to the river, and you can make more money because you'll be making, you know, there may be eight decisions in between there and the turn. And, in theory, you're making those decisions better than your opponents who are not as good as you.
Yeah. So, of course, the next time we talk strategy, Steve, I could have lost both these hands. I could have ran into a set and then, some guy had pocket threes there and then I'd be so. But
yeah, no, I like it, though. That's so key about, like, especially the sixes hand, you know. When you can win a hand where you don't have the best hand, you're just printing money, you know,
right.
That's very cool. Very cool. You don't have to sit and wait around for it when you can spot situations like these.
Right. Well, I'm still, when I say the hands I'm playing, maybe I'll play. I have my little notes of my poker notes that I keep on my phone here, you know, basic stuff like relax, breathe, take a, you know, some of the there's some poker stuff, but all like stick to the ranges with like 9 exclamation points afterwards. So
yeah.
When I say the table's softer, I'm still not opening queen 10 off under the gun.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I'm still betting a pretty strong range, you know, pre-flop anyways. It's just post-flop, I think. People are less capable of holding up to the heat maybe than they are at some other games, or less likely certainly to punish you. For they're not going to rebluff you anyways, you know what I mean? I've adjusted to this 2-5 pretty well. I'm hoping it's a good game for me this year. We'll see. I mean, the ecology of the poker room is always changing, but in terms of stack depth and hand ranges and knowing the player field and going there in a better state of mind, so I'm hoping it's a good year too, Steve. I've targeted 120,000, but that's my target for the year.
Right on.
And that's $10,000 a month. And for me to get that, that means I'm going to be playing a lot of poker.
Yeah.
But, there's still time to have fun, too.
Yeah. Good, man. Cool. Cool. This was a fun one. We got a hand from a listener, but I'm going to save it for next show. Marcus, we'll go over your hand, and we got Andrew Brokus, I believe, on next, so we'll talk it over with him. And it's a cash hand, so that's perfect. If you can be on there, Mikey, and then the Brokus as well, we'll crush this hand.
Okie dokie.
right on. Cool. Well, what do you got for this today? You going to play cards?
Yeah, tonight. I'm going to right now just go to the beach a little bit, then pick up my son from school. Cool. And I have been exercising, so I take him to swim to his swim team, and then I swim right before the swim team does, and he does his homework in the stands, and then I come out of the pool, and then he goes and swims, and I read my book.
Cool.
So, yeah, going to lose the next 7 pounds. And
when is that deadline?
The end of the month.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. And how much do you win?
207 pounds this morning.
No. How much do you win when you win the
bet? Oh, no, I mean, $700. Not a lot, but, you know. Well, I do not want to lose that money, for sure. I can't afford it.
I mean, the bet you made is far better than saying I could be 300 pounds by the end of January.
Right.
I would say that's a negative EV life decision there, but the one you made is a positive one.
I did have to financialize my fat ass for the problem to make this happen here. And quickly, maybe me and Carlos will be on. We'll have the all vegan edition though. But I'm also trying to be. I've been a vegetarian. I haven't had a piece of meat in a month either, Steve.
Wow.
And book I just read, How Not to Die. This is. I know you're for self improvement. This might be a life changer for you. Basically, this is all plant stuff, all plant-based study. Basically, someone who exercises like mad, but eats just whatever.
Yeah.
And is it like, you know, real lean or whatever, will have much more health problems as they go through life than the person who just doesn't exercise, but...
But eats really healthy.
Eats the plant food. You know what I mean?
So I always believe that. He says that in this book?
Yeah, there's all sorts of research to back it up. I mean, okay. The anecdote he starts with is like how this guy got down the line. He said his grandmother was given like pretty much after two open heart surgeries, like she was 65. She came out of her hospital on a wheelchair, and the doctor pretty much given her a death sentence, saying, listen, your heart is so weak, you just probably don't have that long to live. There's nothing more we can do. You know, we can't have another surgery.
Yeah.
Your heart is so. So they were kind of, but... somehow they went to this was like 20, 30 years ago at the time. It was kind of, they went to this guru who said, eat nothing but plants and fruit and nuts, you know, vegetables and nuts. And of course, you know, this is like really dramatic, but he's like, she was walking 2 miles a day 3 weeks later. And she was supposed to have a death sentence and she lived like 27 more years.
Yeah.
So, but there's a lot of other, stuff that the I don't know if you have Netflix, the documentary Forks Over Knives. I think I watched
yes,
that with
yeah, folks, and I wasn't. Yeah.
So that goes into the same thing, like how terrible a lot of this stuff is with you. But again, this guy had like a lot of research to back this up, and it's has a very scientific approach. And I mean, also, you know, if you're an animal lover, I guess, but beyond even sort of any ethical thing, yeah, like the thing I didn't even know. I mean, I know like fruits and vegetables are good for you, but there's like a lot of like spices and stuff which are great for your heart.
Interesting.
Like I didn't even know all these financial these.
So you mentioned Tapatio specifically because I probably keep that company in business.
No, okay. I don't know. I got a bunch. I can't even remember. If we ever want to do a healthy, you know, I'm pretty evangelical about this, but not entirely.
Well, it's obviously working.
Not entirely knowledgeable. Yeah, but this isn't even for... I wanted my dad to do this because they pretty much told him he could go at any minute.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? This is worth trying and see if he can do it. And my mother says she'd do it too, but only if I do it. So she came out here and we did nothing but cooked vegetarian chili, and we made some squash soup, and then we made some black bean pasta with, you know, vegetables and da-da-da. So... I actually started putting weight on again when my mother was here because it's, you know, pasta dishes and whole bread, you know, because I wasn't cutting the calories. So now I'm going back to just having a smoothie and basically a couple health bars each day.
Okay.
So, you will lose weight doing this, obviously. But it makes a very convincing argument that just But the How Not to Die, it's funny. Like, at one point, like, he's talking about you can actually add years to your life. And he was going into, you know, how we get older is, like, the little chromosomes break down. He tried to talk about, like, the end of a shoelace. You know, a phrase?
Yeah.
Continue the phrase so it's done. And they actually showed that some of these cells had not actually repaired themselves that were starting to fray.
Hmm.
So you're actually... I guarantee, since you're such a self-improvement guy, Steve, I guarantee if you actually read this book, you'd be a vegetarian, like, the next day. I don't know. It's hard to imagine. The steaks are so good. Me and my, you know, my sister's on this too. You know, she's always. And the problem is we're like, well, at home it's good because you cook yourself food and you're always having tasty. It's like when you go out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to a friend's house, party, whatever, date, da-da-da-da, you know. So anyways – I'm doing this. Carlos, of course, has been talking about this for a while now. Although I don't think he quite has he's ever stuck with it entirely, had the entire discipline.
Yeah.
But you just got to cut out the sugars and the meats and all the, you know, pretty much everything crap. And it's amazing how still you can eat well, taste well. But it's I haven't even desired the food. I brought vegetarian chili last night, and I still when someone's eating the honey garlic chicken next to you, I mean, you know, you love the taste, but the desire for that is going down a little bit for sure.
So do you eat a lot of beans?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of beans in the chili for sure.
Okay. And how about cottage cheese? Do you eat cottage cheese?
No dairy at all.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, no dairy at all. The dairy, and this isn't just a lot of the stuff, like no fish either. Like a lot, this guy breaks down like this idea that fish oil is good for you. He says it's bad.
Okay.
I don't know. Basically, I forget. He breaks it down how many servings each day of everything you should have. Like, it's like five, let's just say five vegetables, three fruit, two or three nuts. The nuts have all sorts of, like, I bought some Brazil nuts. They supposedly have all sorts of curative powers. I don't know. They're expensive. They're like $15
like
a bag.
Two or three physical nuts, you mean, or two or three servings? So like a quarter cup or like?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, servings right. of, yeah, okay. Basically like a, you know, one meal is a salad with a handful of cashews. I mean, I'd have to look. But also the spices.
Like paprika and stuff? Or?
I don't know, Steve. Can I go to my kitchen and grab the one I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I'm really fucking curious what this is. This is interesting.
Hold on, Steve. I'm over here.
Okay. As the train goes by. Let's make it for great pod right now.
I think the one that's supposed to be really good is the turmeric.
How do we say it? Turmeric?
Yeah, or turmeric. What's the other one here? Curcumin?
Oh, cumin.
Well, curcumin is... actually, this one I take in a pill, but it's like a concentrated something. But the other, you know, I can't remember what they are. You can break. I forget. I have a bunch of seeds that, like, I have. I don't even remember which kind of seeds I have. I have like pumpkin seeds and another seed, and I have this weather. Shit. Let me see. I can go grab my. Well, I can't remember, Steve. I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah. Just making for great pod right now.
Like in your mind, you're like, if you said, well, I'll have nothing but fruits and veggies, that would be good. But there's this guy's, you know, nuts and spices too. Also have all sorts of, you know,
macro ingredients or what are they called? Macronutrients.
Yeah, and I forget. Like broccoli is like the king vegetable, which I despise. But it's like, okay, I can grind a little bit of that into a smoothie.
Yeah.
My smoothies I've had all week have been. Banana spinach with almond milk.
Okay.
Been pretty tasty.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can obviously add some berries and all that kind of stuff. I should give credit to this. There's this one woman who's – and also it's cheap because the first thing you looked at, like I went to Whole Foods. I'm like, shit, man, this is expensive.
Yeah.
But anyways, there's this one woman with a bunch of collection of YouTube videos who would like – I'm shopping for the week and it would be like – $7 a day kind of stuff, you know what I mean? You have to build up your pantry, as they put it. So it's expensive at first. You got to have your yeast and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But Yeah, I can eat pasta with tomato sauce as long as it's all natural. I mean, I black bean pasta, or the red lentil pasta is better than the whole wheat pasta.
Yeah, I know pasta can make you fat. So like if you make the noodles out of a squash or something like that, it's far better than getting like noodles in the package that are like Italian pasta.
Right, noodles. It is less caloric and it's got more protein, but it's also doesn't have like the average pasta in the box is going to have a little funky shit with it. You have to get all natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of good info out there. I don't know. Let me. What was the name of this woman whose videos I watched on TV? Steve, we'll have to do it some other time. I'm not properly prepared for this. Carlos has a bigger brain than I do, so he would be able to go in. But yeah, the book. That by the way is how I really got on it. There's this one guy I know who was I play poker with. He actually owns a rental property. Right across the street from me here. So okay. I run into him. He's out there painting all the time and stuff. So, well, you know, once a month I go over and talk to him. And he started talking about how he feels so good and all this. He feels better than ever and da-da-da. And he talked about the book. And I'm like, well, what do you eat on this? I talked to him for a long time about this. And, he brought me up to his apartment and we went through his refrigerator.
Yeah.
He was so proud of all the stuff. And him and his wife are both doing it. And he's like, I feel 10 years younger. I mean, you know. I mean, but there's a lot of testimony to that, like in the forks over knives thing and all that other kind of thing. But yeah. So you're not just losing weight and avoiding putting crap in your system. You're washing out a lot of crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like all the, you know, all the stuff that's built up in your heart is not just stopping. You're cleaning it out.
Well, you've sold me, sir. I just downloaded the book on my phone right now. I'll give it a listen.
Come down for a visit whenever. I don't know. Maybe we'll try to coordinate if next time Carlos comes. I'm guessing sometime in the spring, but I don't know.
Okay, cool. We'll do. And if you guys want to get the book, How Not to Die, like I just did, we'll put a link in the show notes. I'll throw it up on Twitter. And thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Most of you won't be successful because when you're studying and you get tired, you quit. And I'm here to tell you today, somebody came in my office the other day crying. I said, look, don't cry to give up. Cry to keep going. Don't cry to quit. You already in pain. You already hurt. Get a reward from it. Don't go to sleep until you succeed. Listen to me. I'm here to tell you today that you can come here, you can jump up, you can do flips, you can be excited when we give away money. But listen to me, you'll never be successful until I don't have to give you a dime to do what you do. You won't be successful until you say, I don't need that money, because I got it in here. So if you want to make six figures, you can't just be talking about you want to make six figures. When you want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful.